Actually, we maybe dropped the group theory. So, wait, are we continuing?
Yep.
Okay. So, okay. So let me now switch to talking about tangles on some skeleton S. Okay? So I will write tangles on skeleton S. I will really mean formal linear combinations. I will just I will allow formal linear combinations. So I will not always write it, but I will always mean it. Okay? And this can be filtered by declaring that Tn also, I will not always write the skeleton. When it's not necessary, I will not bother. Okay? So Tn, the nth filtration, will be the part of Tn generated by tangles that have n double points, where each double point is interpreted, so wherever you see a double point, what it means is an overcrossing minus an undercrossing. So if I look at a tangle that has n double points, what I really mean is a linear combination of 2 to the n tangles, where each of the double points could have been replaced either by an overcrossing or by an undercrossing with opposite signs. Okay? An example. So if I'm talking about tangles on two components, so this is a typical tangle on two components, but I could have considered this thing, and this thing really stands for a linear combination of four tangles. Okay? Now, so strictly speaking, it doesn't fit into the definitions I made before, because before I was talking about a situation where I had a single graded vector space and many operations on it, and now I have many different vector spaces, right? One for each choice of skeleton. So really, I have T of, or the tangling of the skeleton X, and then the tanglings of, so these are just knots. If the skeleton is one component, these are just knots. The tanglings of some other skeleton Y, X and Y. And then I'd have the tangling of, some other. So basically I have many spaces. Each of these spaces is graded. There are operations between these spaces. So, for example, there is the operation of stitching X to Y, calling the result back again X. So there is an operation going this way. Okay? Strictly speaking, again, at some point I mentioned that the stitching operations are well defined only if the head of X is next to the tail of Y. And I said one resolution of it, okay, one resolution will be to talk about virtual tangles, and we will be doing this later. But in another resolution of it is to say that we're not only that in the specification of a space of tangles is not only the list of labels of the strands, but also a word that indicates how the ends are ordered. At some point I mentioned it. And then I have separate spaces of tangles for separate words that indicate the ordering on the perimeter. And then if the word is such that X is, that the head of X is adjacent to the tail of Y, then this teaching operation makes sense. So basically I have this big structure made out of spaces, okay, with lots of operations between them, and the spaces are either enumerated just by the skeleton or by the skeleton, comma, a word for the peripheral information. Whatever it is, there is, you can apply the functor GER, and you'll get a corresponding diagram of associated graded spaces, which I will call A. So A of X, and then there will be A of XY, and more precisely I would have to state in which order do the ends come, but again, I will often suppress this, and then there will be some other A for some other skeleton and specification and so on. And clearly, all of the operations respect the filtration. Namely, basically if you start from a tangle with k double points in it, stitching will keep it as a tangle with k double point, and you can resolve it to a linear combination of non-singular tangles before stitching or after stitching, and it clearly doesn't matter. Okay? So all of these operations are compatible with the filtration, and therefore there are corresponding maps in the associated graded. Okay? And then the question arises, okay, first of all, what are these associated graded spaces? So what are these? And is there an expansion? Well, okay, I mean, sort of vector space expansion, of course there is, but the question is there a homomorphic expansion? Okay? Now, if we had a homomorphic, okay, what you could expect on a priori grounds is that these would somehow be simpler than that, than those. At least if you restrict yourself to some specific degree. If you look at these spaces up to degree 7, it should be comparable to looking at your picture pixelated in a coarse way. Or alternatively, up to degree 7 should be corresponding to, instead of looking at infinity functions, look at polynomials, which carry less information. So, which are somehow simpler to manipulate. So you can expect that these will be simpler than those, and if there is a homomorphic expansion, then essentially it's an invariant, which respects our stitching formulas, our stitching operations, so it's a good candidate on which to run all the things that we want to run, we wanted to run. Okay? So the goal is to now understand these things. Okay? So I want to take an aside to explain why these things are somehow called, or how these things are related to finite type invariants. So So again, I will want to go back to this, but first I want to talk about finite type invariants for a minute. And for the purpose of finite type invariants, it's not really necessary to talk about all this baggage of skeletons and words and operations and so on. So I will restrict my attention to the case of tangles with a single component called George, and such tangles I will call knots. Okay? So I will just talk about finite type invariants of knots for a minute, but it's only for to make life simplified. I could have talked about finite type invariants of tangles just as well. So what's a finite type invariant of knots? So first of all, definition. So suppose you have some invariant V of knots. So it's a function from knots into some space. I don't care what. Let's say the rational numbers. Sorry, abelian group. Okay? Any such V automatically extends. So such V extends to N singular knots. So what's an N singular knot? It's a knot that has N double points. So you could just define V on a knot which has my artistic talents were always limited. You can always define V on knots that have double points by the same rule as over there, by basically declaring that V of a double point is V of an overcrossing minus V of an undercrossing, and then iterating. So if you have two double points, you do it twice and three times and so on. Okay? Now, so differences are combinatorial analogs of derivatives, and that's actually kind of rewriting history. Derivatives are analytical analogs of differences. Okay? But anyway, differences are combinatorial analogs of derivatives, and if you iterate differences, it's like iterating derivatives. So it's fair to think of V evaluated on a knot with N double points. So if you have V evaluated, so I'm not writing the rest of the knot, but if you think of V evaluated of a knot with N double point, it's fair to think of it as an nth derivative of V. So in a sense, if you wish, like knots with a single double point are like tangents to the space of knots. Okay? And knots with n double points, with n singularities, are like n jets on the space of knots or something like that, okay? But anyway, once I have derivatives, I can talk about polynomials. So a polynomial is something whose n plus first derivative is equal to zero. So definition, V is called finite type, or alternatively Vasiliev, of type N if it is like a polynomial of degree N. Namely, it's n plus first derivative is equal to zero. So if V, whenever it is computed on a knot with n plus 1, or in fact any number more than n, double points, is equal to zero. So always. Okay? So there is some sort of notion of polynomials on the space of knots. Okay? And then let's define calligraphic V n to be the vector space of all type n invariants. Okay? And it's clear that V, so if you have an invariant which is of type n minus 1, then, well, it's like a polynomial of type n minus 1, which is also a polynomial of degree n. So Vn minus 1 is contained in Vn, is contained in Vn plus 1, so it's an increasing filtration on the space of invariants. Okay? Basically, you know, I mean, an invariant here would vanish whenever you have n double points, but then if you compute it on a knot with n plus 1 double points, it will certainly vanish, because you take the first double point and resolve it, and you're left with two knots that have n double points, so your invariant will vanish on them. So therefore, anything here is automatically there. Okay. So now I want to study finite type invariants inductively. Right? So for that, I need to first of all study V0 and then consider the induction step. So what's V0? So V0 are not invariants that vanish whenever you have a single double point. If you have a single double point, it's like the difference between an overcrossing and an undercrossing. So not invariants that do not change if you switch an overcrossing to an undercrossing. There is only one such invariant, and it's the constant, because you can reach from any knot to any other knot by flipping crossings. So there is only one such invariant, and it's the constant, so this is just Q. Okay? So V0 I already understand, and now I can do the induction step. So what's the induction step? So let me compute Vn modulo Vn minus 1. So basically I want to know how much more is there in Vn that wasn't in Vn minus 1. Okay? But what's Vn? So Vn is really the space of knots, well, dual to the space of knots, so functions on the space of knots, which vanish on knots with n double points, or sorry, n plus 1 double points, which is what I would have called, you know, so this in here, I would there are knots with n or n plus 1 double points. So Vn is really k modulo kn plus 1 dual. So basically it's functions on knots which vanish on knots with n plus 1 double points. And now I want to mod this out by k modulo kn dual, which is this. And now I challenge you to an exercise in linear algebra. So this mod that dual is the dual of kn modulo kn plus 1. Okay? So, sorry, no, it's not that, it's the dual of that. Okay? So that's an exercise in linear algebra. And therefore, and that's exactly what I would have called An over there. So this is exactly what I would have called An. So this is An dual. So in other words, studying that space, or studying this issue, is the same as studying finite type invariants, or is related to studying finite type invariants. And in fact, I mean, I could pursue this relationship further, but maybe not now. But when you talk about finite type invariants, you end up asking yourself, well, you ask yourself, well, I want to identify this space. Well, you have a guess. So it's identified to this, but this is hard to, or this space is hard to make concrete, or it is hard to understand. So you make a guess for what it is, and then you ask yourself, is this guess right? And it turns out that figuring out whether the guess is right or not is the same as constructing an expansion. So really, so this really is, so what I will be doing really is the study of finite type invariants. Or, if you wish, on polynomials on the space of knots. Okay. I skipped something that I should have said. So, maybe I'll take a picture and then say it. What I wanted to say is that there are actually lots of finite type invariants. I mean, at the moment, you might think maybe I'm studying the empty set, and that would be silly. So I want to explain to you why I am not studying the empty set. So maybe I'll erase this. So, for example, consider the Jones polynomial. So, the Jones polynomial was defined by three relations, two of which are relevant. So, an overcrossing became Q times a vertical smoothing minus Q squared times a horizontal smoothing. An undercrossing became minus Q to the negative 2 horizontal plus Q inverse vertical, and then there was a last relation which was an unknot was worth Q plus Q inverse. Okay? And with this you can compute the Jones polynomial of any knot. Take these two relations, and you see, both of them contain a vertical smoothing, right? So I could take some linear combination of these two relations and eliminate the vertical, to eliminate the vertical smoothing. So in fact, if I will take Q inverse times an overcrossing, so this will become a 1, and subtract Q times a negative crossing, the result will be, so let's see, okay, these two will cancel, and I will be left with, well, I'll copy from my notes, but of course you can do it in your head. It's negative Q plus Q inverse times a horizontal smoothing. Is this what I wanted to do? I'm confused. I think I actually, maybe I wanted to get rid of the, it actually doesn't matter which one I get rid of, okay? I think I wanted to get rid of the other one. Yeah, this is it. Now I'm a bit confused. The Skein relation is usually written in terms of the right-hand side being the vertical smoothing. So I wrote something non-standard, but it doesn't matter for the purpose of what I'm going to write, to do. So okay, what this relation means, I'm bothered by the fact that I don't have the signs wrong. It's not the usual.
I got a non-standard Skein relation.
You know, I can just modify it. So, I mean, I can write here Q to the minus 2 so as to get this minus Q squared so as to get this is equal to, so Q to the minus, so this will cancel that, and I will be left with Q inverse times the vertical, oh, this is the standard thing, sorry. I'll be left with Q, Q inverse from here minus Q from there times the vertical smooth. Sorry, now everything is standard. Sorry, I just it actually completely doesn't matter. Okay, but this is the so-called Jones Skein relation, and really it means, if you have three knots that differ only near one, in one place, and one knot has this thing in it, in that place, the other one has that thing, the last one has that thing, then the Jones polynomial of this knot multiplied by Q inverse minus that knot multiplied by Q squared is equal to that. Okay? Now, but I can rewrite it in a different way. So let me rewrite this as an overcrossing minus an undercrossing is equal to Q inverse minus Q times this, but, okay, I moved, you know, I'll get confused if I try to get the signs right. So I'll write plus or minus plus 1 minus Q inverse, Q to the minus 2 times an overcrossing minus 1 minus Q squared times an undercrossing. Sorry, I've done nothing, right? I mean, if you move this to the other side, you'll get that. Okay? But now, write Q is equal to e to the x, so just instead of Q being a variable, write Q equals e to the x and let x be the independent variable.
and you get that a double point, which is an overcrossing minus an undercrossing, is equal to e to the minus x minus e to the x times a smoothing plus 1 minus e to the minus 2x times an overcrossing minus 1 minus e to the 2x times an undercrossing. And now notice that this starts with 1 minus x, and now I subtract 1 plus x, the 1 cancels, so this starts with 2x plus, or maybe negative 2x, plus higher order stuff. This also starts with 2x plus higher order stuff. And this starts with maybe negative 2x, but up to signs, it starts with 2x plus higher order stuff. Okay? So the conclusion is that a double point is worth x times, so I can factor 1x outside, and then I'll get an x plus a times a messy combination. And I really don't care what it is. Or I do care, but not now. Okay? So now, if you compute the Jones polynomial of a knot that has n plus 1 double points, then you just iterate applying this procedure. So you will be replacing the first double point by an x and a messy combination of overcrossings, undercrossing, and smoothings with funny coefficients. Then you'll go for the second double point, replace it by another x, and then messy combination of stuff. So overall, the conclusion is that you get x to the n plus 1 times the Jones polynomial of a messy combination of 3 to the n knots, because each crossing became 3 terms. So of 3 to the n knots with funny coefficients, but not so funny, because when I pulled out the x's, I only got power series in x with positive coefficients. So with positive powers, with coefficients, power series in x, and not Laurent series, I mean positive powers of x. But this means, so conclusion, did I take a picture of this? I think I did. But yeah, I don't want to look at another black, I don't want to use another blackboard. But the conclusion is that if you write J of a knot K as sum x to the n J n of a knot of K, so you just declare that J n is the coefficient of x to the n in the Jones polynomial when you replace Q by e to the x, then if you compute J of a knot with n plus 1 double points, well, its expansion begins at x to the n plus 1. So jn would be 0. Okay? So the conclusion is that if you do this right, rewrite, then jn is of type n. Because whenever you evaluate it on a knot with n plus 1 double points, it must be, the coefficient of x to the n must be 0. So, the Jones polynomial itself is not a finite type invariant. However, if you reparameterize, then each coefficient becomes a finite type invariant. But if you know all the coefficients of the Jones polynomial, you know the Jones polynomial. So the Jones polynomial, again, is not a single finite type invariant, but it is determined. But finite type invariants are at least as powerful as the Jones polynomial. Okay? Good. Okay. So, okay. So now I want to go back to this blackboard and study these A spaces. So, question, what is A of some skeleton? Well, okay, sorry, I mean A of some skeleton is Tn, sorry, An, the degree n piece of the associated graded, is Tn of that skeleton modulo Tn plus 1 of that skeleton. And, well, I'm not sure what it is, or I am sure what it is, but for now I'm not sure what it is. But let me construct a surjective map into it, and later show that that this map is an isomorphism. Okay? So, okay. The most obvious thing you can do is you can look, so how do you get elements of this space? Well, the most obvious thing you can do is to look for tangles with n double points, right? Every tangle with n double points creates an element of this space, okay? If you have a tangle with n double points, you know what, perhaps I'll first draw it for knots. So suppose I have a knot with, three double points. And, well, I map it into here, well, in the case where the skeleton is a single component. Then, such a knot, for such a knot, there is no longer a difference, or once you look at its image here, there is no longer a difference between overcrossings and undercrossings. Because if I looked at the difference between overcrossing minus and undercrossing, then such a difference would be in Tn plus 1. Because it would be the image of a knot with n plus 1 double points. So the thing that really maps in here is pictures like this, where the topology actually doesn't matter, where you can flip undercrossings to overcrossing completely freely, so long as you don't touch the n double points. So now you can ask yourself, okay, so what are knots with n double points modulo ignore topology, modulo switch under to over, modulo you can freely switch over to under? And the answer is, so now suppose you are an ant walking along the knot, then the ant visits a double point, and then it visits and leaves a marker, and then visits another double point, and visits and leaves another marker, and then visits and doesn't see the crossings, and then visits another double point and visits another marker, so and leaves another marker, and continues going this way, and overall, you the order by which the ant visited the double points is unchanged by flipping over to under. Okay? So, I mean, I can mess the, so I can flip over to under and mess the topology as I wish, right? I can move this, create another crossing here and another crossing here. I mean, this would be equivalent to what I had before in the associated graded. But that doesn't change the order by which I went through the double points. So the conclusion is that, well, there is an invariant of such things, modulo ignoring topology, and the invariant is a collection of pairs of points where you pair up the points, a pair of points, if they correspond to the same double point. So, for example, the if I go through the double points here, I go through them first at 1, then through 2, then through 3, then, so I go through them in the order 1, 2, 3, then 1, 2, sorry, 1, 2, 3, then 2 again, then 1 again, then 3 again, 1 again, then 3 again. So this point is paired with that, this one is paired with that, this one is paired with that. Okay? Now, you can check that if two singular knots produce the same such pairing, maybe I should have said this pairing is called a chord diagram for obvious reasons. So you can check that if two singular knots produce the same chord diagram, then they are equivalent modulo switching over to under. Then you can get from one to the other by just switching over to under. Okay? So therefore, there is a map into this space from the space of chord diagram. Chord diagrams. Namely, for each such chord diagram, you find a singular knot whose singularities are coming in this order, and then that singular knot becomes an element of Tn, and it's well defined modulo Tn plus 1. Okay? So, but let me be more precise about what do I mean by chord diagrams. So, for a knot, a chord diagram is a line with a bunch of chords between them. Okay? But for a tangle, the parameter space is no longer a single line, but n lines labeled by the same labels as appearing in this set X, S. Okay? And then the chords really indicate pairs of points that become the same point in the image. But if you have a tangle, a double point could be between different components. So you could have a double point involving this point on component X and that point on component Z. And then you could have another double point involving a lower point on X with a higher point on Z, and another double point corresponding to that. So basically, so that's what chord diagrams are for tangles. And to be precise, I mean here chord diagrams with n chords, and here, well, also I mean with n chords. Okay. So let's call this space Dn of S. So these are n chord diagrams on the skeleton S. So I just told you that there is a map from Dn of S into An of S, and well, it's surjective because, well, basically, well, I've already explained that. Basically, every element in Tn produces a diagram or corresponds to some diagram, so it's surjective. Now, but it's not injective. There is a kernel. So I have to tell you what the kernel consists of. So the kernel consists of two types of things. One silly and one interesting. So here is the silly thing. So consider a kink made with a double point. Resolution, the two resolution of this kink will be the positive, the two resolutions of this singular thing will be the positive kink and the negative kink. But in the world of unframed knots, these two are the same, so this is equal to zero. Okay. Also, in the world of chord diagrams, this corresponds to a small chord. So a chord that connects a point on the skeleton to a neighboring point on the skeleton with nothing in between. So the first relation is the so-called framing independence relation. So it's Fi for framing independence. And the framing independence relation says that if anywhere on any skeleton component you have a chord like this, then it's equal to zero. For framed knots, this becomes false, right? This is not equal to that, and therefore there is no framing independence relation. So this is only true in the unframed case. Okay? And then the more interesting relation is the so-called 4T relation, which we will talk about next time. Okay? So let's stop now.